Good afternoon, everyone. I just want to quick say thanks to the Community Health Planning and Policy section for inviting me to be part of this panel and to be with some close friends and colleagues. I also wanted to put in a quick little plug that there's another ACA session after this one, if you're interested, that talks more about maternal and child health implications of the ACA, and that's in room 109A. So I'm going to go pretty quickly in 15 minutes to really do a few things. Talk about some of the key ACA provisions that impact the health of women, children, including children and youth with special health care needs. For those of you who don't know that acronym, that's what that CYSHCN means, and their families. Identify areas for potential gaps in coverage and access to care, and then really quickly talk about some core roles for public health leaders in assuring the health of MCH populations. And then I'm going to hand it over to my very competent colleagues to give you much more in-depth information around mental health and oral health. Just a quick sentence about AMCHIP. We're the national association that represents the state Title V maternal and child health and children and youth with special health care needs programs in the 50 states and the territories. Our members typically oversee not only the Title V Maternal and Child Health Services Block Grant, but also programs like WIC, Family Planning. They're predominantly located within the State Health Department. And we have a website that's at the end of this presentation with many resources. So I want to take us back a little trip down memory lane when the Affordable Care Act was first passed, just to kind of set this up in terms of what are the kinds of gaps that we can expect or likely expect, and what role we can take as public health in helping to fill the gap and also be at the table in terms of implementing the ACA. So this is probably a review for many of you. As you know, the original design of the ACA was that there would be funding for the exchange subsidies, and that it would be a mix of current public programs, Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program, and then the exchange subsidies, which would provide coverage for the uninsured. And that's a really quick statement about the original design. Again, I'm going to go quickly through this. And as we all know, in June 2012, the Supreme Court ruled and said that essentially states could determine whether or not to expand Medicaid. And so this is a similar slide, but shows the impact of the Supreme Court ruling on eligibility levels for Medicaid if you're an adult, especially living in a state that decides not to expand Medicaid. So what we have ended up with is, instead of a blanket that covers all of us in terms of insurance coverage, we have a patchwork quilt. And this is a wonderful slide that, for those of you who know her, Sarah Rosenbaum has done, and I use it with her permission. Just because it's really hard to read the writing, I'm just going to tell you what the colors represent. But what this slide does and why I like it so much is it combines both what states are expanding Medicaid and which states are doing either the federal marketplace or the state marketplace or the partnership. And so real quickly, just so you can understand the impact here, is that the blue states are those states that are expanding Medicaid with a state-based marketplace. The green-labeled states are those states that are expanding Medicaid with state partnership marketplace. The yellow state are those states that are expanding Medicaid with federally facilitated marketplace. The purple states are states that are not expanding Medicaid, but they do have some type of state-based or state partnership marketplace. And then the red states are the states that are not expanding Medicaid, and they have a federally facilitated marketplace. So hopefully you can remember all of that. And as you can see, it really does show the impact and potential gaps. If you think about the population of adults, and for us at AMCHIP, we care about everyone, but we're particularly care about women and pregnant women. And if you think about women who are uninsured and living in a state that decides not to expand Medicaid, then really their coverage is only linked to their continues to be linked to their pregnancy status. I think another important thing about this slide is that really it's the blue and green states that you might think about as really implementing the original intent of the law. They're expanding Medicaid, and they're also either using a state-based marketplace for their exchange, or they're doing a state partnership marketplace for their exchange. And the red states, I'll just pick on those, trying not to pick on states in the presentation, but just to point out that those are the states that are not going to be expanding Medicaid, and they have a federally facilitated marketplace. I think another important observation, and for those of us who have been around a long time working on healthcare reform, especially when we were and we were around in the days when the state children's health insurance program passed in 1997, I think it's an interesting unscientific observation, but that many of the states that are really implementing the original intent of the ACA are those states that already had been doing much around health reform already. With some exceptions, and I'm going to pick on some states a little bit in terms of the exception, but just to point out, one of my key takeaway messages about the ACA is that health reform happens, and health reform was happening before the ACA passed. It's happening now, and it will continue to happen. And it's really to be addressing kind of things like skyrocketing Medicaid costs and so forth. So I just think it's interesting if you look at states like Oregon, Vermont, some of the states that were known for doing a lot of health reform, especially around for kids, that they indeed are some of the states that are now implementing the ACA with its full intent. Interestingly enough, and for those of you who are remember CHIP well, there were three states that were grandfathered in when the state children's health insurance program passed. Does anybody remember what states those are? Florida, Pennsylvania, and New York. So Florida and Pennsylvania were states that, and New York were three states that when the state children's health insurance program passed in 1997, that had already been doing such significant advances around children's coverage that their programs kind of already qualified for CHIP, and they were kind of grandfathered in. And that's just an important thing, I think, and an important perspective to remember, especially in the current environment in which we live right now, where we're trying to defend the ACA, which it feels like, and also to try and implement the ACA. So this is just a nice slide from the Kaiser Family Foundation. If you haven't been to their website, it's a wonderful resource, and they put out wonderful fact sheets and issue briefs, but this is a nice slide that shows, you know, those eligibility levels for adults living in the states without, there go the lights again, without, in states that don't expand Medicaid. So you can get a sense for if you're an adult living in a state that doesn't expand Medicaid, you will kind of fall within one of these areas. What I tried to do in this slide here is in a very oversimplified way kind of highlight for the maternal and child health populations those provisions of the ACA and kind of their impact on the MCH population and what we can kind of be thinking about. So I picked a few, but certainly as you all know, certainly coverage for preventative services without cost sharing, no lifetime caps or annual limits, essential health benefits, comprehensive preventive services, and elimination of pre-existing condition exclusions really have a positive impact on the maternal and child health population. I think especially for families of children and youth with special health care needs who prior to the ACA often reached a lifetime cap, ACA has made significant strides for all families, but especially for families of kids with special health care needs. I put the question mark by the essential health benefits because I know Burton and others will talk about what this actually means, but and it's on my next slide. But an important thing to remember about, and you probably already know, is that when the regs came out for the ACA, it left it up to states to determine their state benchmark plan in terms of the essential health benefits. And so that was the reason for the question mark, a yes, but in terms of the essential health benefits. So then this is just another slide that, again, oversimplifies a very complex law, but tries to show you the summary of federally required health insurance benefits by coverage type, and I just want to put in a plug for this resource. A colleague of mine did it, and it's a wonderful summary of really, okay, if you're a child and or if you're a pregnant woman kind of or a woman, kind of what kind of coverage do you have based on both the public programs and the health insurance marketplace. And so this is a slide that just kind of touches on it. I think a couple things that are notable, especially when we think about gaps in coverage and gaps that may need to be filled, are a few things. Again, getting back to the issue of if you are a pregnant woman, or if you're a woman of reproductive age, let's start there, and you live in a state that does not expand Medicaid, you will not have access to Medicaid coverage unless you become pregnant, a low-income pregnant woman. And that's low-income, and there's the eligibility levels. So right now, if you're pregnant and living in a state that doesn't expand Medicaid, you will have coverage depending on the state's eligibility levels for Medicaid for pregnant women, but it's only up to 60 days postpartum. And for those of us who work in the MCH field, we were long holding out the ACA as a way to, of course, provide coverage for everyone, but especially help us do things like providing important preconception care and interconception care and all those things we know that are really important in terms of pregnancy outcomes and infant mortality and things like that. So that's just one highlight. I know others will talk about others as well. Another important thing to point out, the health insurance marketplace row, that really kicks in January 2014. And again, just to underscore what I said earlier about it's really states selecting the benchmark plan. So that leaves room for large variability across states. This is really hard to read, but you can get these slides off the APHA website. This, again, is another Kaiser Family Foundation slide. But I wanted to point out, certainly there are wonderful provisions within the ACA for MCH populations, especially with regard to preventative services for women, and that highlighted kind of yellow column just talks about pregnancy-related preventative services. I won't go through all of those, but that's an important resource and something to think about. I also put this up to not let us forget about the important Medicaid EPSDT and what's in place for kids who are in Medicaid, and I call it, it's a benefit, but these are really the services that are covered under Medicaid EPSDT for those children who are enrolled in Medicaid up to age 21. And then going back to that earlier slide that I showed about CHIP, Children's Health Insurance Program, really it varies in terms of coverage depending on whether or not a state has expanded Medicaid under CHIP or if they have a separate CHIP program. So I'm going to close, and again, I told you I'd do this very quickly, but hopefully it'll allow time for some questions and answers and dialogue at the end of this whole panel. But just to talk about some selected gaps and potential gaps in coverage and access to care for MCH populations. Clearly, I've said this already, but just the whole issue of the lack of health insurance coverage for women, really all adults, with incomes below 133% of the federal poverty level, who are not otherwise eligible for Medicaid, that live in states that don't expand Medicaid. Again, coverage will continue for women to be linked to pregnancy status in those states. Clearly, because of the essential health benefits issue and the reg that allowed states to determine their benefit package, that there's going to be a lot of variability in the benefit packages, in cost sharing, and also in affordability for children and their families from state to state. So that patchwork slide I showed, the many colors, not only do we have a patchwork of what states are doing around Medicaid and the marketplace, but we also will have a patchwork with regard to coverage and cost sharing and all those things we look at in terms of Medicaid and CHIP depending on the state that you live in. Again, significant potential for underinsured populations, particularly for children and youth with special health care needs, you know, when services are limited to certain OT or PT or other kinds of visits, that's certainly a big issue. Another big gap, many of you may have heard about this, made the press, is just the whole ACA family glitch, and that's the provision under the ACA that was a bit of a mistake, I believe, that really under employer-sponsored insurance, affordability is only required for the employees, not family coverage. So if you're a family and you're trying to get insurance coverage, the affordability requirement that says that the coverage has to be affordable is only for that employee. It's not for their family coverage. and many of us have family coverage, obviously. There's the option, while preventative services and contraceptive services are required under the ACA, there are some allowances for houses of worship to exclude contraceptive coverage for their employees, and I would say that we could do an entire presentation just on pregnancy-related coverage and women's health, and that folks like Judy Waxman and others in D.C. have wonderful resources on that, so I encourage you to go to their websites for more information. Obviously, the continued issue about lack of insurance coverage for undocumented populations, the big issue of churning between Medicaid and insurance exchanges and back, so what happens when families' income increases and they're on Medicaid, what happens when you're pregnant and you're in an insurance exchange, or you're pregnant and you're in Medicaid and your income changes. And we know from our lessons learned from CHIP that there were major issues between, and there's actually solutions as well, but there were issues between kids, for kids moving between Medicaid and CHIP and private insurance coverage. And that'll certainly be exacerbated with the implementation of the ACA. And then a big thing that we think about at AmChip, and I know others are thinking about, is just lack of provider availability. So once everyone gets coverage, what does it mean to really actually get care and access to care and actually getting to a provider, and a provider that will also see you is a whole other issue. Another lesson learned from CHIP, if you remember, is that when the Children's Health Insurance Program passed, many state leaders said, you know, CHIP really helped us improve our Medicaid program, and so from the research we know that many oftentimes families don't know they're eligible for Medicaid or for CHIP. That was the issue back then, and so certainly we'll see an influx of more people hopefully into Medicaid. Well, then what does that mean for providers? We know that not all providers accept Medicaid, or if they do accept someone with Medicaid, it's only a certain percentage of their practice. What does that mean for the whole safety net? I'm going to just close by just really encouraging and following, following on the presentation of you get out there and advocate is also just get out there and as a public health professional and leader, be at the table. We need to be at the table around ACA implementation, whether or not it directly, in fact, impacts our work or we're part of that work. And in this slide, I just kind of show a range of roles that public health can and we are taking in terms of both systems building from a state perspective, resources for service delivery, resources for clinical management, and for clinical care. And it certainly ranges from everything from, and I'm sure there's those of you in the room who are doing this already, from outreach and enrollment to using public health data to inform quality to being involved in accountable care organizations, to really tracking the impact of the ACA on maternal and child health populations, on adults, and who is not getting care and who is not getting into care. Those are all really critical, critical roles for public health to play. The flip side of this is I would also say and end with and underscore what was said earlier is we really, really, really need to have strong messages about why do we still need public health even though we have the ACA? So we know that there's a lot of discussion going on around the ACA and the benefit or not of that law. At the same time, we at AmChip and others have been fighting the whole question from policymakers as to why do we continue to need the Title V Maternal and Child Health Services Block Grant or fill in the blank, WIC, family planning, fill in the blank with your favorite public program, now that we have the ACA. Won't that take care of everything? So we've had to do a lot of educating of policymakers at the national level about why is the Title V Maternal and Child Health Services Program still needed, why is public health still critical, and what is the complementary role we play? We all know in public health that insurance coverage is critical, but it's not the only thing that's going to make for improved health outcomes, correct? And we need to really underscore that message again and again and again. And I would just say, please, please get involved. Be at the ACA table in the range of roles if you're not already, but also be at the table in terms of advocating for public health and for MCH. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.